views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Meet everybody and welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron here on the Para-X Radio Network. We're starting out tonight with a little bit of Celtic folk music because my guest is Barry Fitzgerald, and we're going to be talking about his trilogy of fiction books that began with The Council of Three in 2015, followed by The Malice of Darkness, and finally Fracture that was released just this past March. And Barry's no stranger to the supernatural, having headed the team and appeared in all 56 episodes of Ghost Hunters International, where he explored a quandary of paranormal and supernatural phenomenon around the globe. And he's the author of several nonfiction books, including Searching the She, In the Midst of the Gods, Banshee, and Legend Seekers. And I'm anxious to hear all about the trilogy and happy to have another opportunity to verbally hang out with Barry. So I think we need to jump right in because we've got a lot to cover. Barry, welcome back.
Marla, thank you very much for having me on. It's been too long since we spoke the last time.
I know. We're both grayer and older and more wrinkled, and that's really scary. if we could turn back time, yes?
indeed.
Now, the Council of Three series delves into Irish folklore and the truths that hide therein. And even though it's fiction, I'm guessing that the genesis of this trilogy came to be from maybe bits and pieces of your nonfiction books and your experiences in the paranormal world, as well as your knowledge of Irish folklore and mythology. Is that a halfway decent guess on my part?
That would be pretty much on the mark. You see, Marla, the new research that I've been doing on the Neolithic Irish And we're talking about people who were on the island before the Great Pyramids of Giza were built down in Egypt. And they were constructing platforms and passage chambers, which seemed to harmonize at a particular frequency. And so that understanding that particular research and what our Neolithic ancestors were possibly doing led me to author the Council of Three trilogy, which really takes us through that research, and of course begins with the Council of Three, the very first one, which is in itself it is based in Sligo, Ireland, on the west coast, and we're introduced to Peter Walsh, who's a young reporter based in the town, and his investigations into the infamous Sligo Five, which was five children who disappeared, quickly leads him down a path, down a murky, oppressive path of discovery, which breaks down his cornerstones of core values. That particular story plays out and rolls us into The Malice of Darkness, which was to be the second book.
You know, it's interesting because we were talking a little bit before the show, and you said that you didn't want to. You went into doing fiction, kicking and screaming. thankfully, Donna, your wife, was there with a pin and poking you, which is what all good wives will do when they're onto something good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we were talking about writing fiction and how different it is from writing nonfiction. But, you know, the fear probably that you had, too, aside from putting it all together and, you know, organizing it, and we talked about this, is that when you write fiction usually writes itself. And you know, you don't have to worry about the plot and the twists and the turns. It happens.
Pretty much. I have to say that the script almost had to follow a certain path. And there were times that I had to take myself off and for maybe a month and a half, mm-hmm. and just allow that script to filter down through. And you're right, it was as if someone else was writing that story.
That's what makes it easy, because instead of writing, you're literally writing, but it's like you're reading a story as you go, because you don't know what you're writing. It's just, you know, happening.
And for me, I'm a very visual person, and I have to say, whenever I took myself off and found some quiet time to see this play out, you know, in your mind, that's pretty much what I was doing. I was writing what I was seeing, but there were times when you know you just have to give it time, mm-hmm. and just let it happen. And in those times, that's whenever the stories really developed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and isn't it amazing how you'll write something as clever as can be, and you're really shocked that it came out of yourself?
Oh, believe me, Fracture, the third one, I had no idea where on earth it was going. I had no idea whatsoever. But you know, it's very satisfying to have the trilogy done. I have to say, it really is an accomplishment, which I have enjoyed. It has been a remarkable story to get through, and understanding what our Neolithic ancestors were doing and incorporating that into this particular story, it means that their story doesn't die, mm-hmm. and I like that. It was a nice crossover.
Yeah, well, you know, our little witchy thing about revering the ancestors and those who have gone before, so you don't forget, and that's exactly what you did. You also talk about the aspects of Irish mythology being introduced to the global arena and the unique similarities that our cultures share with this platform, because we think we're also very different, but at the same time, perhaps the similarities are so obvious that they're maybe overlooked. What do you think?
Very, very, very much, Marla. And, you know, going into this, initially, I think one of my big supporters had been Donna, and she really pushed me to really produce Banshee. This I suppose a teller of death within Irish folklore mythology. There was a lot of stories that were circulating the internet which were not correct, and it was getting my goat up, never mind anyone else's, that they weren't getting their facts right. So of course Donna was pressurized me into doing the Banshee book, and Banshee itself originates from the older Irish Binshee, and she in itself, there are several different meanings of she, S-I-D-H-E. Mm-hmm. And the first meaning, of course, is the people of the fairy.
Yeah.
But she also refers to the mound, the passage chambers in which these things came through. And so technically, really what Bean She means is woman of the mound. So she was coming through this doorway, this portal, if you like, from one place to another, and that had been used for a long, long, long time. But the whole aspect of a mound and something coming through it is shared also within the Hopi traditions, and even if we go back into the ancient Egyptians, Amun was the creator god who entered this world. He was a serpentine god, by the way. And he entered this world through the great mound and into this world. So you tend to find there are many, many connections with mounds right around the world, creationists, and you will also tend to find that either the doorway is guarded, or or what's behind the doorway is giant serpents. That seems to be a similarity which crosses the board.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they seem to show up in just about every culture, don't they?
They do. Yes, very very much so, in various different forms, of course. But there's always a connection to this, the sun, the moon, and right back into these ancient gatekeepers, if you like, who can be exceptionally knowledgeable, of course, but also there was a price that came with that knowledge.
Yes, and you know, it's kind of the same thing about believing in ghosts and ghost lore in general, because I don't know any civilization from day one that didn't talk about spirits and ghosts and stuff.
That's right, yeah.
You know, some come differently, but they're all basically the same, and they say the same things.
Yeah, very, very much so. And in fact, you know, it's strange to see the difference between then and now, because now the whole aspect of ghosts and everything else is widely accepted. Yet for our ancients, it was seen as a bad omen.
Yeah.
Because the dead were meant to go to their place, and if you saw them, if they came back, something was wrong. Uh-huh. Something had to be done. Because the dead were meant to stay in their world, they weren't meant to come back to ours. Now if we take that same premise and we apply it to the modern world today, then what is it we're actually seeing? If the dead are meant to stay in their own world, then what the hell is it that's playing this game of deceit? So that's another lecture for another day.
Yeah, that's an interesting lecture for another day. Take notes, write this down, get back to me. because there's so much, you know, so much speculation and so many ways of thinking about things, but they all kind of go back to the same kind of a core thought process idea. And even today, there are people who will say that seeing a ghost is a bad omen, They won't say, well, here's Uncle Bill, you know, or Bob's your uncle, whatever. Here he is, and it's a good thing. It's nice to see you. They're going to go, oh, hell, now what? You know, the sky is going to fall, or, you know, something bad's going to happen. A bad omen, a portent. And well, I think go ahead.
You know, whenever we do look at the modern age, and it's quite humorous, I find, to, you know, you'll often come across people who will say, oh, there's no bad in the spirit world. It's all positive. It's all light, love and light, as they say.
Sure.
But, you know, I always think back to our ancestors and everything else, and the wonderful texts and manuscripts that they've left us over the centuries that explain these aspects, this negative trait within the spirit world. So, you know, whenever we hear someone say within their 5 years of experience, or maybe 6 months experience, because they maybe got a certificate over the internet. But when they say no, there's no such thing. It really mystifies me to think that they're overriding thousands of years of knowledge.
Yeah.
In their short span of experience.
Yeah.
There's a lot to learn from our ancestors. We need to take time to connect and relearn what they have already learned.
The ancient ways were ways that worked for many, many years before modern technology stepped up and modern medicine stepped up and all that. There's a lot of information that we lose because of that, because we think of something, instead of being something old and respected, we think it's old and obsolete. And that's far from being the case.
Well, so certainly, you know, whenever you just happen to mention the medical aspects, you know, psychiatry, you know, originates from what is it, the Middle Latin, psychiatria, which means to heal the soul.
Yeah.
And, you know, we look at it today and we think to ourselves, well, who's healing the souls today? Instead of popping pills, well, who's mending the souls today?
Yeah.
It really does make you wonder.
It does. And, you know, going back that far, healing the souls, therefore there are souls, therefore there are spirits, you know, I mean, from day one. So it just, everything old is new again, but some people just prefer new to old. And that's where I kind of go, okay, yeah, 6 months of experience is about right. Got a question from the chat room. Cater wants to know if you have a special regimen you follow when writing.
No, I can't, because my writing style is very, very different. I know there's a lot of people there would sit down, they would say, oh, well, you know, after breakfast, come 10 o'clock, then I'll write until 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. And every day. Well, that simply doesn't work for me. I have to wait until the information is, as we were talking before, it's almost as if it's being downloaded. And I have to wait until that arrives. And that could take a month and a half. That's been the longest, and because I start the stories and I have no idea where on earth they're going, and as long as I get the information instilled within the story, I'm happy enough with that. But where the story is going, I have no idea. I don't know until it's done.
I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way to write. As you said, it's an individual preference. Some people need to outline every paragraph and sit down at a certain time, and that's fine. If people are that regimented, that's a good thing. But to say that's the right way, I don't think so. There is no right or wrong. There just is, right?
No.
All right.
Well, as I say, you know, for me, I wanted to instill the work into the stories, and the Council of Three was more or less an introduction into the work, because the Malice of Darkness, the second part, really introduces us to Keelan Murphy and her experiences with the incubus and succubus and who they really are and what they were doing to her and what was the driving forces behind it. So, you know, you go from the Council of Three, which was okay, you know, you're dealing with on the surface there, you're dealing with some of the older folklore and mythology. But then once we get to the Malice of Darkness, that's whenever we punch through the veil and we start discovering who's throwing the shots from behind that doorway.
Mm-hmm. That's the interesting part. Also, he had a second part of the question. He wondered if you were inspired in your writing by Yeats, W.B. Yeats.
You know, some of the Yeats's work I did enjoy, there were other writers, of course, as well, Irish writers and other writers across the world, which inspire me as well. I think one of my biggest authors that I enjoyed reading was John A. Keel. I thought he had a fascinating fascinating stories to tell, and I was introduced to his work while I was at school. I came across his book Jadoo, and that was it. I was hooked on his form of writing from then since, and so I was sorry to see him go, but we all have to go at some stage.
Yes, but doesn't mean we have to leave, right?
No, well, I've thought about this many times, Marla, and I've said to Donna as well, don't even wait for me. Once I see that light, boom, I'm gone. I ain't coming back. And I've said to Donna, I won't even leave a message, a voicemail on the Ouija board. So I'll be gone. I'll see you on the other side.
Wow.
I have many adventures on the other side.
Just going to say, goodbye world. Well, maybe there goes reincarnation too, possibly, since I believe we have control whether we come back or not. Sure. It sounds like you're anxious to get a round-trip ticket here. I don't know, Barry. but all right, so if somebody comes looking after you, they won't find you, even if the best medium in the world tries to contact you, you're going to put up the close sign, right?
I'm going to be gone.
Okay, well, that's fine. Speaking of ghosts, I've got another question in the chat room. Sherry's talking about black ghosts. She said that some say that seeing black ghosts is fatal, that you will die from it.
No, that's I don't know where she got that from. I have never ever come across this. I've seen many in my time, but they have never killed me. There are certain elements of that dark spirit that can manifest into that incubus succubus that we touched on earlier. Mm-hmm. And the true identity of those particular entities, of course, stem further back again, back before the Babylonian times as well. They've been here for a long time, they come under many different guises. And this has been the problem that we have faced as a human race, that these things keep using this cloak and dagger, and promises many things and deliver nothing really. Mm-hmm. And it always infuriates me. In fact, my patience has waned to a zero whenever I hear someone say, "Oh, well, the spirits aren't ready to tell you yet," and then that's whenever I flip out. It says, "You've been here with the human race for thousands of years, and we're not ready yet." What I tend to see that when I see that type of behavior coming from the spirit world, then there's something to hide, and I have very little patience for it. And when you start pressurizing them, and when you suspect more so that you're being told a lie, mm-hmm. The moment that you become suspicious, that's whenever they'll back off. Uh-huh. And because there are certain things that they don't want known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of agree with that. And she just wrote that the black ghosts come from Chinese culture. Is where she got that.
I know that they're global. I've never heard of anything else from the Chinese. Helping, which of course is a problematic one.
Right, yeah. So I'm not familiar with the concept of black ghost per se. I mean, what kind is that? Just a negative spirit? Is that something that's like a shadow person in black in color? How does... Tell me about a black ghost.
Well, certainly within the Western society, we would see it as that shadow type, that shadow being the type that stands out from steps out into your room from the darkness, mm-hmm. from the darkest parts of the room, mm-hmm. whether it be from the closet, from the dark corner, under the bed. Mm-hmm. That's whenever these things come out, because they can't have the dark, or they can't have the ultraviolet light. They can't manifest in UV, mm-hmm. So they come from the darkness. And it's interesting that for children, when they tend to see these particular entities and they run in and tell the parents, that of course the parents, they come in and they look around, they check the closet and they check under the bed, and they give their child a glass of milk and a cookie and tell them to go back to bed. There's nothing there. Mm-hmm. Children's eyes are actually more responsive to the light, to the electromagnetic spectrum. So they see a wider band of spectrum as adults do. So, you know, whenever we say there's nothing there, well, that's maybe not the case. So something to consider.
No, I agree with you. It's such a wide realm in general. I mean, not just spirits, but elementals, all these things. Mm. I mean, they're around us. They're around us all the time. We don't. It's amazing that more people don't see it, feel it, know it, you know, and that people doubt it. I mean, our world is alive, and not just with sentient beings.
Well, I brought there was a medium. Maybe we shouldn't call him medium, but medium sensitive. Mm-hmm. Came across from England recently, and I got the pleasure to put this guy through the mill and to see, because you know yourself, Marla, there are big claims made by many of these people.
Yep.
And they rarely can produce the merchandise. Mm-hmm. But this guy came over, and I have to say, he passed with flying colors. I was very, very surprised and to see him work and understand that he had a true gift. Mm-hmm. But I brought him to a property and the property itself had a very bizarre history. And to look at it, there are no signs. This guy didn't even know where on earth he was going. Mm-hmm. There were no signs as to the history of this place whatsoever. But he started making the connections to the history and the connections to Egypt and everything else. Mm-hmm. And he was spot on. The history was correct. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't know what on earth he was messing with within the house itself, because the property had a djinn within it. Mm-hmm. And although it was being exceptionally forceful and had frightened the living bejesus out of anybody who had lived in the house beforehand. In fact, the Jesuits, I'm led to believe, had the house for a time, and they weren't able to do anything with it either.
Wow.
But this particular entity, which came across from Syria, with some other artifacts back in 1916, mm-hmm. and once he arrived in the house, that was it. The house, my goodness, it was one of the worst hauntings that the county, that the whole of Ireland had ever seen.
Wow.
But this guy picked it up. He got it. He got the history. He got the layout of the house and everything else. This guy has a talent, mm-hmm. I would like to see him go on and do more things.
And doesn't it? I mean, this sounds really bad, but you know, I'm skeptical of most people, mm-hmm. and when somebody does prove themselves to me, it's like somebody smacked me upside the head, and I'm like, oh my God, and it kind of renews your faith in the other side and in wherever you want to call it, because mm-hmm. you know, anybody can patch on a label and say I'm this or I'm that, mm-hmm. but when somebody actually comes through, it's just like this wake-up call, and it really renews your faith in some people and some things.
I had a great talent, I got to say. He's a fantastic guy. So best of luck to him. And I was glad to see that that he was a true sensitive stroke medium and not one that that claimed it and, of course, took the cash with it.
There you go. And that's why they do it and they get away with it. But that's for another show, too.
Indeed.
Now, you talk about, as far as the book goes, readers experiencing a paradigm shift that will alter their perceptions. Yes. In what ways?
Well, that relates to our history, about what we have been told, the way our history within our schools. And that's been an interesting change for me, because for me initially it really began with In the Mist of Gods. That was the book that was written back in 2012.
Yes.
And when that came around, you know, I was investigating a cave in the Mayan underworld, and this cave stretched for another 3.5 miles under the mountain. But there was something in the cave that was luring us deeper into the cave system, and our cave guides were screaming at us not to go any deeper, because these voices, their grandfathers had told them about these voices, and if we followed them, they would kill us. Now, that to me was a carrot to a donkey. so, of course, I was going to go further, but I had to have a sense of wit as well about me. You know, I had to be able to sense that environment as well, and understand the threat. And it got to a point where we came to deep water, and this water must have been a good 30 to 40 feet deep. It just shot off into the darkness, into the cave floor. Mm-hmm. But whatever this thing was only about 100 yards away. And we were almost within reaching distance of it, but I had to cross this span of water to get to it. And I haven't had an exceptionally terrifying experience in Romania, in a lake there with something that tried to end my life there. I said no. I called it quits, because I had not only two cast members with me as well. Mm-hmm. I also had a film crew behind me with their equipment, and I wasn't going to risk anyone else on this. Yeah. And the moment that we turned, that's whenever it stopped communicating. But that took me on a whirlwind tour, and right into the heart of mythology and folklore, eventually culminating in the visit to the Island of the Dead, up in County Donegal, which was a place of oracle. And this had been a place of oracle for thousands of years. Something went wrong at the site. And for the life of me, I still can't figure out what actually went wrong. But the church ended up in 1497. It was closed, and it was reopened. There was another island on the lake, and it was reopened there and duplicated. But the original island still stood, and with the understanding that it was a passage chamber, a Neolithic passage chamber that was built before the Great Pyramids of Giza, the formation in which it was laid out enhances harmonics. So when you're inside it, you really get there's what can be called a standing wave. It's a style of vibration, which can be enhanced by human voice. And when this is all done, that's whenever the doorway opens, and that's whenever you get to see these things on the other side. And I might add, they get to see you too. So it's a two-way door. You may be blessed that it may be okay. On the other hand, you may not be blessed, and it mightn't go okay after all. But this was a place that you could go to, and I went to, not understanding totally what I was about to step into, because you'll get other investigators there, such as Graham Hancock and things like that, who have in the past used ayahuasca, which is a type of hallucinogen used in the jungles of the Amazon. But I assure you, Marla, I didn't even have a cup of tea when I went to this island. And it was horrific. It was terrifying. But it was that experience that changed my own perception and paradigm to the reality of what we were being told in the schools and the history of the church as well and what we were actually communicating with. So that's where the big change comes from, you know, this idea that that what we're told is not necessarily the case. And we can find similar traits of stories all the way back through time. The passage chambers, for instance, if we consider those, there were two types of passage chamber that were designed for orientation for the worship of the sun, and there was another one which was for the worship of the moon. Mm-hmm. For the worship of the sun, its orientation was usually northwest. So as the sun was starting to set, the beam of light would pierce into this chamber, mm-hmm. and that would be a handover of power on June the 21st. That was the death of the sun was on June 21st.
The equinox.
However, for the handover of power was to the female, to the feminine, mm-hmm. and that handover of power was succeeded on December the 23rd. Mm-hmm. And where we had the birth of the sun.
Yes.
The birth of the sun on December the 23rd. Mm-hmm. How ironic that we also have the birth of the sun on December the 25th. And yes. The similarities are exceptionally unique.
I'm sure you're not a witch. You know too much. Mm-hmm.
No, Donna's the witch.
Okay, all right. And you say that in the best possible way. We need to clarify this, yes. Because some people say witch like it's a bad thing, but, you know, I don't believe that at all.
She knows my thoughts. I can hide nothing. There was that element to it. But for some reason, there's something that we have lost in history, in that around 2600 BC, we've seen this almost an eradication of the feminine, and because the majority of the chambers that pointed to the winter equinox were destroyed, except for Newgrange, which is the biggest complex that we have in Ireland, mm-hmm. And it was buried. So we have this abandonment almost of all these Neolithic stones, standing stones and passage chambers were almost abandoned overnight right across Europe. Something went wrong, and that's the mystery. You know, what exactly happened? Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of speculation out there whether it was an asteroid impact or whether it was Theia that exploded down in the Mediterranean, and it could have been a multitude of things all at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it left that these places were abandoned almost overnight.
Yeah. And you know, the sad thing is, I mean, certain things we can dig deep and we can learn and we can find out, but there are so many mysteries that we'll probably never know for sure what happened, why they happened. It's almost sad in a way. I mean, because those are maybe important things that would clear up a lot about what's happening today and things. So
mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a little bit frustrating.
There is a lot, you know, a lot of the inscriptions that were left within the chambers, their various different designs. 75% of all Neolithic art appear in Ireland. From all around the world, it's 75% appear in Ireland.
Wow.
And a lot of the symbols that we were led to believe by archaeologists, which were like, for instance, the concentric circles, we were led to believe was nothing more than a calendar week. Well, that's actually, I challenge that now. That's possibly not the case, because when we start putting vibrations through onto a vibrating plate, and we can duplicate that particular pattern, with the use of sound and vibration. So in other words, what we're seeing is a frequency that was actually carved into the walls of these chambers.
Wow.
The frequency that I'm looking at the moment, actually, there was one at 110 hertz, but my attention has been directed to a higher frequency because of fantastic work done by Italian scientists. And the frequency and symbolism, the symbols that we're looking at, reaches this is around 440 hertz.
Mm.
And so that's pretty high, and that's much higher this time. I know that there was a few. I had to laugh recently because there was a few videos on YouTube that were promising this 440 hertz sound booth that you could have, and you could vibrate yourself in 440 hertz and stimulate your third eye and everything else. Fantastic, the promises that they were making on YouTube. However, whenever I actually put it through the spectrum analysis, what it was actually more in tune with was your colon. So I had to laugh that what they're actually selling you is a bag of, and I'll leave the blank, listen and fill in themselves.
Well, it's kind of, you know, YouTube is kind of very good for a lot of things, but in some ways it's just like looking up something on Wikipedia to get the truth.
Oh my goodness, Wikipedia. Don't talk to me about Wikipedia. Apparently I'm dead.
I saw that the other day. I thought you wrote it and that it was a joke. Tell everybody what it said, because I burst out laughing. I thought it was really funny.
And apparently I disappeared as well into the Iron Mountains looking for a doorway to another world.
Yes.
And I've never been seen since.
Yes. So, yeah. I saw
I'm
that
doing
yesterday.
Quite well. I'm doing quite well considering I've vanished.
Yes, because I've never, you know, had long conversations with spirit like I would with you. So I think you're doing an amazing job. But I saw that yesterday, and I honest to God, I believed that you wrote it as a joke. I didn't think that somebody would actually do that if it weren't you.
Oh, Wikipedia. You got to love it.
You do, yes. And, people believe things on the internet, and okay, don't. Not everything. Use your brain. All right. So, I've been reading the blurbs about each book. See how carefully I went back to that. And the storylines all seem quite compelling, yet they're different from each other.
They are.
So tell a couple of little teases and then explain how you tied them all together to make it a nice, concise trilogy.
Well, the Council of Three, as I said, it delves into the life of Peter Walsh, a young reporter based in Sligo. And life for Peter, when he delves into this particular Shiri realm, will never be the same as he comes face to face with the truth which has been hidden in plain sight for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
This is the introduction to what the readers are about to be introduced to, and it's about Peter's struggle to try and help and offer his loyalty to a former school teacher, which really leads him into an unusual series of events which begins to break him down as a person, both physically and spiritually. And that leads us into the malice of darkness, and of course Cillian Murphy, the young vet from Northern Ireland, and she ends up slipping into this conflict with the Fae, and how insidious they can become when they target her family and leave her with nothing. And it's about her fight to the end, and that of course leads us then into Fracture, and Fracture is set slightly ahead in the time frame, because the Council of Three and the Malice of Darkness are in the same timeline, and in fact you get Peter Walsh slipping across into both books. However, Keelan Murphy finds her way into Fracture, and as psychic Chris Henderson from America, from Seattle, becomes embroiled in a 15-year-old murder case. And the insidious powers that circle the case have reached great heights and challenge the resolve of Chris and those that work with her. Mm-hmm. And what she's starting to unveil is this huge war of ages, and a war described in her ancient manuscripts and spoken in whispers, a war where human life is expendable, and for those that do survive, the price becomes too high to pay. So Fracture really brings it to the head. Mm-hmm. And it becomes exceptionally explosive.
Wow. See, I like books that are in a trilogy or you know, if it's a good book and it keeps going, you don't want it to stop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite sure you could probably get a fourth one out of this, but, you know,
believe it or not, I have started the prequel.
You're doing a Star Wars thing. Yeah, okay.
Because it was Donna, there she is again. she's been pushing me into doing this, and you know, the person Kathy Danver that was doing the editing for me, she said that the Council of Three and the Malice of Darkness, they had that particular voice that I had found to tell the story. And she said Fracture was completely different.
Yeah.
She said she thoroughly enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And she hates the way that I kill people off. But she she thoroughly enjoyed it. But she says it was a completely different voice. And that in itself is very, very unique and very different.
Yes.
However, when I look at the prequel, mm-hmm. I don't even recognize the voice.
Wow.
Again, it's just... You got to take where it's coming from and write what you see, and that's what I'm doing. And it's a different voice again.
Yeah. See, isn't that amazing? And did you realize that, or did she point it out to you?
She pointed it out, but I have to say, I even see the strangeness of the prequel myself, in seeing this difference.
Yeah.
In the writing style and what is happening, and it's absolutely fascinating where it's going.
Ah, all right. So now we have to ask the age old question: where can people run out and buy the trilogy?
They can pop over to www.charmstealer.com and /books. And there will be a list of books there that people can get, or they can pop over to Amazon or Kindle and get them there as well.
Yeah, I love the fact that somebody invented Kindle, because honestly, if I have time, I want to sit and hold a book and read it. I do.
Yeah.
But there are times that, you know, you get the Kindle, you've got it on your phone, you've got it on your tablet, you've got it on your computer, and it comes in handy. But it is a blessing.
I personally like to have the hard copy. I like the book in my hands.
Me too.
But I can see the necessity for Kindle as well.
Yeah, it runs both ways. And thank you for putting them on both those different platforms, because I know I got Banshee and the She and the other one on Kindle, and it's a nice change. Now let's jump for a second, because you're usually out doing lots of tours, lots of events, lots of this, lots of that.
Yes.
You just did a couple of really interesting things. You want to talk about those for a second and then talk about what's coming up in the near future?
Certainly. Yeah. I'm just back from, I would imagine about a month and a half now. I'm back from the Caribbean. I was on the Ghost Cruise there.
Mm-hmm.
And last weekend I was in Manchester, UK, where I was lecturing there on these doorways and the ancient Neolithic Irish, and the vibrations and everything else. So that was going wonderfully well. But for any of the listeners who would wish to visit Ireland this year, the Ghost Cruise are doing a great tour to Ireland on the 7th of October to the 14th, and we're staying in a privately owned castle. It's formerly a Fitzgerald home. It's three castles built into one. A beautiful, beautiful castle. We have a private chef and everything else, and we have a week's events planned, which even include visiting a castle haunted by a vampire.
So
that's a different one as well for us. So so folks there can log on to ghosthuntercruise.com for more details. And you happen to say if I'm ever back in California, as it happens, though the dates we're still working on the dates. I will be visiting Porterville over the course of Halloween, October this year, where there'll be a series of lectures being planned. So I'm thoroughly looking forward to that.
Well, rent a car, take a couple hour drive down here to LA, and there's a pub with your name on it. That's all I'm going to say. We will go. But yeah, I mean, you usually have so many really neat things going on around you. And the other thing, I want to get back to the books for a second. I want to talk about Legend Seekers because there's so much in Legend Seekers. It's not just, okay, it's not Banshee. It's not, just one thing. Talk a little bit about Legend Seekers because that's excellent books to buy as well.
Well, Legend Seekers in itself, what we wanted to do was to inspire the youth from behind their PlayStations and Xboxes and back out into the countryside again. And we started investigating these ancient tales, and some not so ancient, to see if there was anything in the landscape that may still linger and that we can interact with. And I have to say, Marta, we were very surprised, shocked, and sometimes frightened about what we had actually come across. And we started work on the second batch of stories. And what we tend to do, you see, is we will release the name of the people who own the property or the land in which you need to get on, a contact detail, whether it be telephone or whether it be email, in which you can ask for permission to get onto the land, and also the GPS coordinates, so that everybody who is anybody wants to visit the site, they can do so and know how to go about it. However, in the second batch, we came across an old quarry, and the story of it was really shocking, because what we had was a place, this quarry that was opened up, a quarry stroke mine, and people were being killed, machinery was breaking down, people were being clubbed in the back of the head as they were working on a table saw, and their fingers were being cut off. The people that were living on site, they were bringing in religious artifacts, artifacts such as crosses and everything else, and holy water to try and keep the peace. And these things were being smashed to powder. Doors were being ripped off, and they even went to the extent of bringing in large German shepherd dogs. And the dogs were being murdered by this thing on the site.
Oh, Jesus.
And we investigated it. And I have to say, Marla, this is one of these places that both Cormac and I have both agreed we do not release the GPS coordinates to this place.
Right.
Because of the safety. For the reader, for the people who would go. And whenever we were drawing a close to the particular story and our own experiences on the site, we came across, we were introduced to another quarry in Galway in which the same thing was happening.
Wow.
And it was really, these were connected back to the spirits of the land and how they can really get annoyed. If you end up doing things that you really shouldn't be. And, we ended up going back. We wanted to see how far this went back. And in Ireland, we have one of the best resources for mythology and folklore, which is online. It's a huge, it's the world's largest database of mythology and folklore that we have in Ireland. But also with that, we also have a database, an amazing database, which shows all our archaeological sites. And when we went to that particular mountain, we can see, and bear in mind, I might add, that mountains were very, very important for the Neolithic. You were building on the mountain. But instead, we find thousands of artifacts and sites around the mountain, but nothing on it. Even back then, they knew to stay the hell off that mountain. And in our ignorance in the modern society, we didn't pay attention. And they started to reap the fruits of what they sowed once they opened the ground.
Yeah. Well, it was defacing.
It really was, yeah. And not only that, but not asking permission.
Right.
There was certain elements to that needed to be adhered to. You know, many times we open ground, we don't think about it. You know, it's all grand. But there are some places we need to leave well enough alone. And this was one of those places.
And we find out the hard way when we do, right? I mean, it's not quite the same thing, but it was like, you know, people breaking into the pyramids in Egypt and stealing artifacts and opening tombs. I mean, certain things just need to be left alone, because if not, they will get you in one way or the other.
That's it. And some of our history has been neglected because of certain things that were being done. For instance, we have a particular a series of passage chambers here in County Sligo, which were opened by the English back in 1911 by using dynamite. And they blew them to smithereens.
Oh.
And there was one of the chambers was massive on the inside. It was beautiful on the inside. And what they did is they smashed all the stones and backfilled it. Whatever they found in there, they didn't want anyone else to know. Mm. And they smashed it and backfilled it. And it was a crime. It really was a crime.
Wow. People just don't know when to leave well enough alone, do they?
Mm-hmm. That is true.
And they pay for it some way or the other. Well, talking about being smashed to smithereens, we better get out of here and make way for the next show. Not that she will do it personally, but, you know, sometimes the internet gods kind of get angry and do a war dance. So, Barry, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming back to talk about the books, and I hope everybody gets them and enjoys them. And you're welcome any time to talk about, well, let's see, we had two soapbox things that we put aside, so we've got stuff to talk about down the line, right? Yes, disgruntled, befuddled people. Yes, we are.
Thank you very much, Marla. It was a great pleasure.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. And everybody, thank you in the chat room for listening, and all the people that are listening on the podcast. And until next time, everybody, blessed be, and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at this same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2014. Moonlight Hall by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.